And we know that raising a child takes a village. You know, for students to succeed, we need all experts in the table. And families are the experts in their kids. And we can't have that outside, you know, of the school system and not integrate it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Highest Aspirations, an education podcast focused on providing educators with inspiration and strategies to help multilingual learners achieve their highest aspirations. I'm your host, Steve Sofronis. But for this episode, my role is simply to provide an introduction. My colleague and friend, Sandra Medrano Arroyo, who also happens to be Elevation's National Director of Multilingual Learner Success, picked up the microphone for a great interview with Sofia Nunez. They draw upon their vast collective experience as multilingual learner professionals to provide valuable insights on partnering with families of multilingual learners to close learning gaps in the classroom and creating more inclusive environments by bridging the language and culture gap. They also lay out three specific focus areas for fostering family engagement and advocacy. Sandra and Sofia connected at a conference they both attended a few months back. They were equally impressed by the work that they were both engaged in, and so it made complete sense to bring them together for this episode. Sofia Nunez is an energetic, committed education leader, public speaker, and consultant. She is the founder and CEO of Empower the Voice, a nonprofit focusing on increasing opportunities for Hispanic students through empowering families to participate in leadership, language acquisition, and the transition to college and career. With over 12 years of experience in education, Nunez served school districts in multiple capacities. You can read her full bio on our show notes. Sandra Medrano Arroyo presently serves as the National Director of Multilingual Learner Success here at Elevation. She began her career in the private sector, serving as a teacher, academic coach, and school director. Wanting to extend her reach, she moved to Palm Beach County School District, where she served for 16 years in various administrative roles. Sandra, as a colleague, is committed to supporting multilingualism and multiculturalism as pathways for success. She is an amazing colleague, and I'm so excited for her to take the reins. Please enjoy this conversation between Sandra Medrano Arroyo and Sofia Nunez.
Hi, Sofia. Sofia Nunez, thank you. Thanks for joining us on Highest Aspiration.
Hi, Sandra. It's just an honor and a pleasure to be here today. Thank you for the invitation.
Of course. All right, let's get started. You talked about a moment in which you realized that families of our multilingual learners were in need of specific information to help them become advocates for our children. And I remember that so clearly when you and I spoke, right? Because it touched my heart. So tell us a little bit about what you were doing in your life and how did that awareness change your goals?
So, Sandra, it started as a very self-serving idea in my desperation to close learning gaps in the classroom. So my background is in economics, and I came to education through alternative certification. So teaching fifth grade bilingual, the principal must have been desperate because he hired me for that position. And I had students that were really struggling, even with the most basic reading, decoding, sight words. I had students, you know, with problems in regrouping. And, you know, I was like in pain, like, how am I going to help these students? And so one day, you know, I was in my classroom and thinking, you know, I'm carrying the entire world in my shoulders. And I decided that, you know what, I'm not alone. The families are here. So I started creating materials for the families so that they could help their children. And in turn, you know, they would help me. My passion for the families grew. And one day they posted a position for the Title III Parent Engagement Facilitator. And I kept thinking, you know, should I apply? Should I not apply? I was scared. You know, I liked the classroom. But after 2 months, the position was still open. And I said, God, are you talking to me? And so I applied, got the job, loved the job. I was doing ESL classes for adults, you know, GED programs for adults, computer literacy. And, you know, my relationships with the families were really, really strong. And when I completed my master's, I was on my way to decide to go through the principal route. And, you know, I was committed to this idea. I got my principal certification. And when I was ready, all the boxes, all the requirements that I needed to do. I was like, okay, if I go inside the school setting again, this work will not continue. And I know that the families want this additional support. And I felt that it was me, the person who had to keep doing what I was already doing. And so I decided that after 7 years, you know, the platform that I had was, you know, a school district, but I wanted to bring everything that I had learned about those additional supports that Hispanic families needed. And so I founded Empower the Voice and decided not to be a school principal.
That is great because I know a lot of different districts and partners are definitely benefiting from that. You know, I want to go back for a minute. You mentioned that you hadn't studied to be a teacher, right? You went into this profession through one of those alternative certification processes. And it's curious to me, I wonder, as a bilingual professional, you were in a new career, a new setting. What did it teach you about the benefits of language and culture and understanding the importance of that?
So first of all, you know, language and culture are like an instant bridge for an inclusive and supportive learning environment. In terms of the language, as a teacher, you have immediate support for your students in their language one, in this case, Spanish. The students are also able to demonstrate their knowledge in the language that they're more comfortable in. And so that's wonderful. But in addition to that, they are also more comfortable to use translanguaging and expand their language repertoire and provide more insight into their thinking. So in terms of culture, it allows you to understand what ideas your students can connect really well to. It allows you to understand, you know, what is it that they're going to get engaged by? Make those meaningful connections with what they're learning. And also, you learn more from their own stories, from their family, so that, you know, if, you know, you have a student having trouble with perimeter and area. Well, this family, they, you know, they paint houses. And so you have a student that can easily help you interpret and close that gap. So, I mean, it's amazing to understand that and to be more connected with your student. But personally, for me, I had a very deep connection to the families because I had just, you know, left Honduras because of the violence and the lack of safety that I didn't want my child to grow in. And I knew that families had made huge sacrifices to be here in America. And it was humbling for me because my story seemed like, I want to say, a little bit privileged, although it was hard. You know, I had a lot of more advantages than a lot of the families that I was serving. So it was humbling. It was an honor to serve them. And whatever I wanted for my child, I knew that these families wanted the same thing for their kids. So you have no, you've made huge sacrifices. There is no way that your kids are going to fail here. You have to do what's best for them. And so to me, that connection was enormous. And especially when I had my girl students call me mom, you know, because I saw them as my kids. I saw them that whatever I thought about Juan Fernando's learning, I also wanted to honor the families in that way, to give the best of me for my students. So, you know, in a nutshell, not only knowing the language and the culture, but that connection because of the power of our stories that would unite me with our families and their students.
I love that story that they called you mom. Right? That means they also felt your love, your dedication to them. So hence, you've got these three buckets of work, right? Mm-hmm. Based on all these beautiful experiences. You have college and career readiness. You've got language acquisition, and you also have family leadership. Mm-hmm. And this became your why. Right? So tell us a little bit about how each one of those creates access to opportunities that our children deserve.
So Sandra, one of the biggest things to understand about hard to reach families, and, you know, for all all educators, we have to believe that every family can support student learning. You know, because I have these deep connections to the community and to the families that I serve, I know that hands down, they want college and careers for their kids. And not really because of that narrative that our families don't have, because our families have a lot of assets and a lot of them do really well, you know, with their businesses. We have families in construction businesses. We have families, you know, with electricians. A lot of the families in our community, the moms don't work because the dads are doing well enough. And they know that college and career will give a different lifestyle, will give that, you know, that generational push, will help their kids have families in which they can participate, you know, because that it's really hard. They work long, long hours. And so college and career was a must, especially because when I decided to start Empower the Voice, it was my turn to go with my son through the college application process. He's currently about to get, you know, his high school diploma. And I thought to myself, wait a minute, Sophia, you cannot have college and career when you have families that are going to go through the same thing as you're going through right now. And, you know, the families might think, you know, other families know how to get their kids to college. And I knew that even with all the training I had, this process is daunting, regardless of your profession or your economic status, whatever. This causes a lot of anxiety in the family because we want the best for our kids. You know, we don't take it for granted. So college and career, hands down, our families want it, our families need it. So let's go for it. Let's support them. We have been able to get groups of students that are already, you know, finalizing their college choices. And it's just so exciting to see this transforming, you know, moment in their lives. Then we talked about family leadership. So family leadership for me is essential in the work that we do. Specifically, families have three main roles that impact. They have multiple roles, but the roles that mostly impact the trajectory of their students in education are supporting education at home. That doesn't mean that they have to go to the PTA, right? They are setting, you know, schedules at home. It's the invisible family engagement that counts, you know, preparing the kids with the tools that they need that we don't provide at school. And it's managing their time, you know, having a quiet space, you know, having those good work habits. It's really a complement of what the schools are doing. And it's super important, you know, the conversations that the families have about education, right? In this family, we value education. In this family, you know, we acknowledge that you have to do your homework. You know, that's a priority for this family. So that really impacts on the student and how they approach the schoolwork. On the other side, there's also monitoring student progress. That piece is key. And so if you monitor the progress of your students are more likely to succeed because if there's something that they're not getting and you're seeing, okay, so what's happening here? You know, that prompts the advocacy piece, which is the next most impactful role that the families play. So if you think about how families engage with schools and the distrust that there's in the system, you know, and as a teacher, it's not that they distrust you. It's you are part of this institution, you know, that has done many things that have not favored diverse families. And so you can understand that you are not the best spokesperson. So when you create that leadership within the families, there's trusted peers that can, you know, back up whatever you are telling your families or whatever you're trying to help them learn or discover about the education system in the United States, they're going to trust more a peer than what they trust our institutions. So you need that family leadership, because also you have to believe, and we know that raising a child takes a village. You know, for students to succeed, we need all experts in the table, and families are the experts in their kids. And we can't have that outside, you know, of the school system and not integrated, because that's the way that we are going to touch the kids in their hearts. If we know our kids, if we know them, if we know what they like, you know, if we know what their passions are, it's the best way to help the students make connections in the classroom and make meaningful connections. So family leadership, you know, it's not only about increasing the knowledge and skills of the families, it's about building their capability to use those tools, building their networks. Because when they have a network that they can trust and that they can rely on, they don't feel alone like I felt in the classroom before engaging with the families. And not that my team was great. I would have not survived the profession without my team and wonderful leaders, right? But still, it feels lonely when you're the only adult in the classroom, right?
That is true.
The other thing that is really important is that we need to reframe the conversation around the roles of that the families believe that they play. If our families believe that their role is to, you know, take their kid to school or make sure, you know, their uniform is clean or their clothes is clean or make sure that they go at bedtime and this at this time, you know, the families are thinking, check, I do this. I do this every night, but there's more that they need to do, right? And so changing those beliefs of what is it that it takes to make this kid a successful kid, because that's what we want. It's really important. So we're trying to address it through that family leadership component, providing the networks, right, for the families and building their confidence so that they can use the tools. And then finally, this one to me, it's the systems-based approach to improving the results that we're seeing of our English learners. In Texas, we now call them emergent bilinguals to acknowledge the assets that they're bringing in language one, which I love. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the rest of the country, they're still English learners. So if you look at the data from the Department of Education, I think the latest one is from 1996, where it shows that high school graduation rates for English learners are second to last, next to special education students. And so to me, this is shocking. This is mind-blowing. Are you telling me that being bilingual or multilingual is bad? It doesn't produce results. When you know, as an immigrant, of the advantages of multilingualism, not only in the check that you're able to negotiate, you know, your salaries, not only in that, but it's deeper than that, because it's an intersection of cultures, you know, through language, and it's really so enriching. And are you telling me that our kids, because they have more than one language, are performing this way? So to me, this is problematic. And the one thing that really, you know, if you compare the two populations, the two last populations with our special education students and English learners, they're both are protected by laws. And so they're protected by laws, but there's a difference in how do we treat special education students in terms of family engagement. And the huge difference is that these students have an ARD meeting admission review and dismissal meeting where the family, a member of the family, has to be there, co-creating the goals in the education plan, specialized education plan, right, for the student, and monitoring progress. However, when we talk about English learners, at least in Texas, what we have is a parent representative that sits down and sometimes, you know, can sign 150 of these in 30, 45 minutes. And so it is essential for the systems to change. I call for a new way of having integrating the family voice into these annual progress. You know, I call for more awareness about the process of language acquisition because it's a long process. It's not a, oh, let's do it this year and you're out. No, it's a recurrent process, right? And as families, we can support our students at home if we understand which domains they need to improve to be able to reclassify and go into the mainstream. Because what is really problematic is that if kids go into high school with the tag of English learners, their opportunities to take, you know, courses that are more challenging, courses that are things where they can figure out what they want to be in the future. You know, I think that we're cutting that opportunity from them because they have not reclassified and cannot find a career track. And so at the end, I see a lot of our long-term English learners not motivated about learning and thinking that learning is not for them. And so that's why that family piece is so important within the language acquisition.
These buckets of work are incredibly important for our students' success. I want to touch upon, you mentioned a couple of things, right? So that every family can support their child's learning. Absolutely. But monitoring their child's progress, right? Becoming aware of language acquisition, both them as well as their own children, our students, right? And the impact that has in their future opportunities. All of that takes a lot of effort on a school's behalf, right? Because we're talking about informing and educating our parents so that they can become those advocates. But on the flip side of that, we have a lot of parents who are intimidated, as you said, mistrust the system perhaps, also intimidated because they don't speak the language, right? So in their mind, they are providing for their child, right? They're setting up a place for their child to do the homework. They provide the meals in the evening. They do everything else that they know as a parent that they should be doing, but they really don't understand what else they can do. And so I'm wondering if you can give some suggestions to our listeners. You know, how do you approach families and create those welcoming environments for them to become advocates or for the school to begin the process of informing and educating and then creating advocates of them?
So the first thing is, you know, understanding that this is not something that is not additional. You're already doing it. You know, it's already mandatory. But beyond mandatory, because I see, you know, that a lot of what we're told is really aspirational in Title III. It's very aspirational on how to engage, you know, the families of our English learners. And so really, it's about relationships. It's about developing the trust. A smile goes a long way. A welcoming environment starts with a smile. I think from my experience, elementaries and, you know, early education centers are really very good at this. As the kid starts growing older, you know, families kind of let it, you know, they're growing up. They don't need me so much. They want their kids to have that autonomy. But at the same time, our kids need a lot of guidance. So that those smiles in the front door, especially when, you know, in the high schools, there's not a lot of people that might speak the language that the parents are speaking. Just making them feel that even though they might not speak a language, they're welcomed. But there's also a lot of action to be done when you're sending out communication. Try to send it out, you know, in multiple languages. There's amazing apps. Some of them are free that the teachers can use to interpret, translate and interpret. You know, those are tools that are really effective. But it's beyond the language. And what I really think that is fascinating is that over 50 years of dedicated researchers have found that no matter the background. And when I first read this, no matter the background, what? So if they don't know English, they can still make an impact? Yes, no matter the backgrounds, when families are engaged and involved, students are more likely to succeed. They're happier about school. They have more a better attendance rates. They have more chances to get a higher education. But there's also benefits for the teachers. You know, when the families are engaged and involved, the teachers also feel better. They also can, you know, have more understanding about their students and build more meaningful connections to them, with them. And for the families, you know, to be able to get into the schools, to be able to know how the system works, brings them closer to their kids, and that's what they want. And so really easy things, right, that they're already doing, but just do it with a little bit more of intentionality, you know, like, okay, so everybody needs to try to create this authentic relationships with the families through smile, right? Respecting cultural differences. That's a big one, right? How do we respect them? Well, you know, we just acknowledge that we have a different set of norms and values, and our values and norms are not here. We're equal. You know, it's up to the families to decide how they want to approach, you know, the education to their students, but it's also up to us to guide the families through the most crucial and important moments, which are transitions. So don't make families come to the school for nothing. Link it to the student learning. That's very impactful. And also try to communicate in language that is accessible to families, especially our English learner families. They don't need the acronyms. Acronyms are really... you know, put people here because I know this terminology and you're down here because you don't know it, right? So think about when you go to a doctor's office and you don't know which words to use because you're going to disclose very personal information, right? And so you have to research, you know, how do I call this? What do I say, right? And when the doctor responds to you, if they respond to you in their own jargon, you're going to feel lost. And so that's how families feel when we use acronyms. So that communication, I found this pretty interesting because I love that in Empower the Voice, I get to have my own lab. So I test my ideas, right? And so we were doing a very serious family workshop. It was going to be dense, right? So how do I word it so that families want to come? Because if I tell them, oh, okay, this is about, you know, how the IEP is helpful and how you can help create these goals, right? They're not going to come. But we named it Strengthening Your Voice in Special Education Meetings. Very simple. We had great turnout. And people knew exactly what day we're going to go for, even though we talked about the law, even though we talked about the Supreme Court, and you know, we really were intentional on, okay, this is the way that we're going to talk the love language of our families. I see, for example, that we when we use the word success, oh my God, families love success because they have
I'm hopes, sure.
you know, for their kids. So that's, you know, trying to be intentional on how to engage them, to come, you know, being intentional about the time. Usually, you know, I've found that some of our participants in our workshops, they don't end at five their workday. And so specifically if they're in construction, they want to go home and take a shower before they show up to a school event. So if your school event is at five, a lot of people who don't have that additional time are not going to be able to make it, right? And then the other one is to see our families as learners. Think about when you go to staff development, right? And now we're using the Bambrick model, right? And bite size, and we split it up into different workshops. Like if we provide all of the information to the families, they're going to be overwhelmed and not really grasp what you want them to grasp. So be intentional. Why are the families coming? Right? And go beyond the checklist of compliance. Yes, because this is a Title III compliance thing. We need to bring the families. No.
Right.
What are the families going to get out of this family workshop? And so that has to be very clear for the families on what action steps are you wanting from the families after they go to the workshop. So I think that these are easy. You know, you're already doing these, but just a little bit more of intentionality and thinking about the positive impact that it will have for your school. And in addition, you know, that advocacy piece goes beyond. We know that families are advocating for higher pay for teachers because families care about the teachers. They care for right. the system. They want a good school system. So there's no reason of, you know, they're here, we're here or whatever. We're equal partners and we all want the best for our kids. So let's collaborate together for a successful launch to success for these students.
Absolutely. And I totally agree with that statement, right? Because I think that they see teachers as someone to be respected, right? Someone who has this knowledge and this willingness to impart this knowledge in a classroom full of children, right? And that's to be respected. And so I love that you brought that out. And those are all easy to implement, as you mentioned, small wins that a school can implement pretty quickly to help educate and empower families. I think that one of the things that I took note of was that welcoming environment begins with a smile. And how easy is that? So when our kids walk into our schools, I checked out your website before we spoke, and I'm going to make sure that our listeners have your website as well. But you stated that families' voices have history, feelings, color, and power. And that stood out to me. Can you share with us some of your favorite testimonials where acknowledging these family voices has actually transformed the family's life?
So I was mentioning our strengthening the voice in special education meetings. So one of our moms actually has been with us in several of our family workshops. And I really wanted for the families to have like a trusted messenger. And so, of course, you know, don't look at my eyes because I'm going to ask you to get out of your comfort zone. I always warn them. And I asked her if she could do like a little testimonial to invite families. And so she did something that really touched my heart. And she mentioned how she used to believe that the accommodations that were given to her son were something that the teachers were doing as a favor. And now she understands that her son has rights. And so to me, the knowledge that she's receiving through our programs and seeing her internalize her role and, you know, the that advocacy piece, because it went, that was a small win. But then we did the, we actually did the workshop. And after the workshop, she got new knowledge, right? And with this new tool, she decided she would email the principal and ask him, because her son, he's going from pre-K to kinder. And so he's mm-hmm. an early childhood center right now, but he's transitioning to elementary. And so she was concerned because some of the accommodations that her child was receiving at the pre-K center were not written down. And so she decided to reach out to the principal and request an ARD meeting to make sure that these accommodations were in place before the next school year starts, so that when her son goes to school first day, he has what he needs to be successful. So that filled my heart. There was another small win, which to me, this was huge. I mentioned about supporting a group of students with their college application process. We had a mom in the group that she honestly, you know, when we started, and we started kind of late because, I mean, my process was, you know, I'm going to get everything ready before I start Empower the Voice. And then all of a sudden I'm like, no, I need to get started, right? So we start in September with our first family workshop about college and career. And she was so anxious about the process. And granted, she has already two older sons that have gone to college. But with this one, he really didn't believe that he was college material, right? And so we went through a process with him. We helped him with his school essays. He didn't show up to all of the meetings, right? He struggled to complete it, but he did complete it. And there was a period where, you know, I was doing my text group and providing more tools and, you know, reaching out, and she was not responding. So since she didn't respond, I called her, and it was kind of a cold conversation. You know, I was wondering, you know, what things do we need to improve? Because, you know, we really want to make sure that everybody is calm during that process and we're providing the right supports. So anyways, this mom called me 2 weeks ago, and she said, I know that I haven't reached out to you, but is it too late to sign up to be a volunteer tomorrow? And my heart, Sandra, like, thank you, God. Wow. Because it really validates the work that we're doing. And the last one I want to talk about, a panel that we brought Hispanic, young, talented, recent graduates from college, sharing their journey on how to pay for college. And so one of the girls in our panel, amazing story, she didn't have a legal status when she graduated high school. And she shared, you know, very intimate moments and vulnerable moments in her life when everybody was telling her, so why are you even thinking about going to college? And a four-year college for you? I mean, you don't have papers. Like, why are you, you know, trying this? And she wrote an essay about being a butterfly. And how all of the things that she's endured because of her legal status have, you know, turned into something so big. And she's emerging as a butterfly as she's applying to her four-year college. She got into her four-year college, and she graduated, and she's an amazing professional. She's on DACA now. But, you know, for the kids that were listening there, because that leadership piece involve the students as well. We want the families and the students to be leaders in our communities. And so she, one of the moms, I do a coffee every month the first Friday of every month with the moms, and it's not nothing structured. We just talk about being moms, and we talk about, you know, navigating the education system and share stories. And so one of the moms, she said that after that workshop, after that panel, her daughter decided that she wanted to go to college. She's a junior now, and so she'll sign up for our program for next school year. So that was so amazing to know, you know, we're not only thinking that we're making impact, but we're actually making impact in the families that we're serving. So that's amazing.
Yeah, no, definitely. I always find it overwhelmingly incredible, I'm going to say, that sometimes the smallest thing that we may do, the smallest action that we take, the smallest conversation that we believe we've had with someone is actually so impactful in their life. And so every one of these small wins that you've given us, these testimonials, have been true opportunities. They've opened up doors of opportunities for families, for students, for them to reach these beautiful personal as well as academic goals. And so you're doing a lot of fantastic things. And so on that note, how can people learn more about the work that you're doing?
So I encourage everybody, if you have social media, you can join our follow us on Facebook, Instagram. We also have a TikTok account. It's empower.the.voice. And we also have a website, empowerthevoice.org. We're working on putting more resources in it, and we're excited about the things that we're going to be sharing. We have a lot of material that we have collected in videos, and we're putting like small capsules that we're going to be pushing out, especially to change the narrative of, you know, that difficulty that families sometimes face with approaching and getting close to schools, and empowering them to believe that they have agency, because our families have agency, and it's more impactful when they talk to others. Because when you feel that you're not alone, and when you see other families engaging with the school system, we kind of normalize it. We lower the affective filter, and we come together as a community. And that's what I envision, a transformation of the way in which we engage with schools, not only from the, you know, side of the school system, but also the ways that the families approach the school system and validate the impact of our interaction and collaboration.
So when you mentioned social media and you mentioned the videos, it reminded me of someone that you mentioned right before we started the recording, Angelica, I think mm-hmm. is what she's... Okay, so who is Angelica?
Okay, so this is one of the things that I love about not being in the school system anymore, because I don't have to ask permission, and my creativity just explodes with Angelica. Angelica is a character that we have created. She's a Hispanic mom. She's luchona. I mean, she works hard. She wants her son Pablito to be the best. And so we're sharing little, you know, comic strips of Angelica and Angelica, the way that she sees the world and her optimism, and how does she jumps the hurdles, you know, to get Pablito in the right track. So my latest one, I don't know when we're gonna air, but yeah, there's some funny ones. I hope people enjoy it. And help me through these stories, change the narrative. We can. Yes, we can do it. We as Hispanic families or immigrant families, we have to learn from the playbook of how to make your kids successful. So we're trying to get that playbook together through the actions that our families in Empower the Voice are taking to ensure success for their students.
Okay, so we're going to check out Angelica on social media, correct?
Awesome.
Okay, I'm going to look for her. I'm already a fan of hers. Right. And so as we come to a close, I would imagine that you have a favorite book, a book that you probably go to, right, to either inspire yourself or to continue to learn. You mentioned a lot of resources, a lot of research that you've also read. So is there a book, a film, or maybe some other resource completely different that's had an important influence on you, either personally or professionally, and you would recommend our listeners to pick up?
So Sandra, because I live family engagement,
I can
breathe
tell.
Family engagement. Family engagement is so embedded to me that I think it was a month ago, my mom was visiting and I had to go for a consulting at a small school district outside of town, and my mom was here. So I brought my mom and I'm sitting at the assistant superintendent's office. And it was an awkward moment because my mom was with me. And so she came in the office and I'm like, if this is not a testament about family engagement, look who I brought my mom.
That's wonderful.
But the book is Powerful Partnerships by Karen Mapp. This book really transformed. I thought in the classroom that I knew about family engagement. And, you know, with Karen Mapp, she has done an amazing piece of art in this book, because I was able to connect with my own story, with the struggles of my mom, which I already had that empathy because my mom raised three kids as a single mother, but she also wanted for us to be bilingual. And when I went through school, I was the kid that would always make up stories that didn't want to go to school. And so I'm sick, you know, I fell down, I don't want to go. And I threw so many tantrums that I really didn't go to pre-K or kinder. And when I got, because I cried myself out of school and people allowed me to do it. So I didn't know how to decode. I didn't know how to read. And I had an older cousin. And so she taught me the lessons. And so I memorized the lessons. They found out in the middle of first grade that I couldn't read. In the middle of first grade, because I had recited half of the book. Every
time. So much time lost.
And they called my mom by third grade and they told her, you know, you're wasting your money. And, you know, in Honduras, I went to private school, which is really normal in Latin America. And they said, we don't think that your daughter is ever going to learn how to speak English, or, you know, she's not really smart. And so why don't you change her to a monolingual school? And so what my mom did is at third grade, she decided that that was not a good fit for me. And she sent me to another school where I repeated third grade and I learned how to read. And if you know the statistics, if you're not reading by third grade, you are not going to learn through reading. And so definitely that was so impactful in my life at an early stage. One decision. My mom never went to the school function. Well, some of the school functions, Mother's Day, yes, but she wasn't, you know, present there because she was working as a single mom. And this book really helped me understand my why. Help me understand, you know, I'm not going to give up on diverse families. I'm not going to give up on the families that, you know, it's la abuelita, you know, the grandma or the aunt or the families that is a brother or a sister. I'm not going to give up on the hopes and dreams that we have for our children. I want our children to succeed. There's space for everybody. There's opportunities for everybody. So we cannot be gatekeepers. If we want a better world, we must make sure that our kids live their passions. And so we as adults, we have to, you know, just provide them all the supports, and the families are essential in providing those supports.
Sophia, thank you. It has been wonderful speaking to you. I've taken so many notes, so many things I want to make sure that I remember, but I truly thank you for this wonderful conversation. And I hope to have you back on Highest Aspirations.
Thank you, Sandra. It's been a pleasure for me. I'm honored to be here.
Thanks for listening to Highest Aspirations. If you liked our show, please be sure to join the ELL community at elevationeducation.com/ELL community, where you'll find all the episodes of Highest Aspirations and other resources to help educators maximize the impact on their English language learners. Also, let us know how we're doing by writing a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts.